Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a very special early edition of Unlocking the Unknown Radio. I'm your host, Gary Fisher. Thanks for tuning in at this special time. While we wait for our guest to connect, since he's calling in from the United Kingdom, let's go over a couple things. I've got a couple announcements and some cool things and some cool changes that are coming to the program that I think you guys are really going to like. First off, Unlocking the Unknown Radio is always proud to be sponsored by the Paranormal Research Organization of Florida, or PROOF. Our website is www.flghost.com. If you live in Florida and are having paranormal issues, please get a hold of us and we'll see what we can do to help. We're also proud to be sponsored by Phantom Corps Paranormal Production Company, run by Adam Anderson. And that initial episode is getting ready to drop here in the next few weeks. I'll have more information on it as I get it. We're also proud to be sponsored by Ed Bogrowski's group, Paratools. They can be found at www.paratools.net. If you're looking for a phone app, paranormal tool, or device, his are the best on the market. Please get in contact with him and see if he's got something that'll work for you. And finally, we're proud to be sponsored by the Paranormal Kicks Cancer Charity. Their address is www.paranormalkickscancer.org. All proceeds and donations to that cancer charity go to the Base Children's Camp here in Florida for children with cancer. All right, so now on to the exciting stuff. This will be the last Wednesday night of the show. Starting next week on the 31st of March, the show is moving to Thursday for the last week in March, all of April, and the first weekend of May. And it'll be on Thursday nights from 9 to 11, unless otherwise specified. And I'll let you know the week before if for some reason the time is going to change. But I've got some exciting guests coming up in April. I don't want to give away too much, but I'll give you a couple hints. I'll give you three hints to kind of talk about some of my guests coming up. Alaska Monsters, Ghost Asylum, and Ghost Hunters. Now, who I'm going to be interviewing from those shows, you'll have to tune in to find out. But it's going to be an exciting, exciting month of guests and shows that we're going to be doing. And then my final big announcement is, after that first week in May, when we're on the 4th of May, we'll be rolling back to Wednesday on the 4th of May. But then starting 9 May and going forward, I've been in negotiations with LiveParanormal.com the last few weeks, and the show is actually going to be moving from Blog Talk to LiveParanormal.com starting Monday, May 9th, and it'll be every Monday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. So the day will change, the time will stay the same, but we're moving to LiveParanormal.com, and I'm really excited about that. I hope you that have been loyal listeners from the beginning, to include special shout-out to Brian Huxley, who contacts me every week with feedback on the show and what he would like to see and hear on the show. I hope you guys, the loyal listeners, will follow me over to LiveParanormal.com. And as well as the people we've picked up along the way that have tried the show out and stuck with us, I think it's going to be a really good move, and it's actually going to allow our audience to grow, and it's going to actually allow the show to be heard on different platforms. So your ease of accessibility will be more once I move to Live Paranormal as far as getting the show. But I'll talk to more about that as we get closer. We're just waiting for our guest tonight to join in. I've just got a message from him. He should be clicking in here momentarily, but I'm really excited about the move to Live Paranormal. It's a great bunch of people over there. They've got some amazing hosts of other shows over there already. They actually have one channel devoted to nothing but paranormal shows. They have a TV channel on that same website devoted to paranormal shows, and I will be one of the fledgling first shows on their second paranormal radio show. Channel. So I'm really, really excited about that. So like I said, starting May 9th, the show will be moving to liveparanormal.com. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce my guest tonight. He is a paranormal investigator. He's also a conspiracy investigator with Beyond the White Noise Paranormal from the United Kingdom's Mr. Steve Foy. Steve, thanks for taking time out of your late night over there and joining us this evening. Steve, are you there? I see you on the board. Might want to check your mic, buddy. Well, while we wait to see for Steve to get his connection fixed, I also want to let you know, for those of you listening live, the chat room is open. If you'd like to go into the chat room, and if you have any questions for Steve or myself as it relates to the world of paranormal or conspiracy and conspiracy theories, please go in there and write them down, jot them down, and I'll do my best to get to them as soon as possible. Let's try Steve again here. See if he can hear us. Steve, can you hear us? Having some connectivity issues. You know how it goes, folks, in live radio. Just when you think everything's going according to plan, we can't, he can hear us, but we cannot hear him. So hopefully, maybe it's his mic is muted, perhaps. Not really sure. But while we wait to hear from Steve, like I said, there's a lot of exciting things coming up with the program. We've got a lot of really cool guests lined up for the last week in March, all the way through April to the first week in May. I can let you know that the first week of May, May 4th, our guest is going to be from Curse the Bell Witch, Mr. John Kalick. We had to reschedule him from a couple weeks back, actually last week. So that was when that show got rescheduled to, which is why it's on a funky day. He's got a lot of television projects in the work, and we had to kind of work around his schedule. Tell you what, Steve, I know you can hear me. I'm going to go ahead and disconnect you. Why don't you try to reconnect with the program and see if we can get the mic.
Can you hear me now?
Ah, there he is. Ladies and gentlemen, from the United Kingdom, from Beyond the White Noise Paranormal, Mr. Steve Foy.
Did I save that at the last second then, did I?
You did. I was getting ready to disconnect and have you call back in.
I know. I'm sorry about the little bump in the road there, but thanks for finally getting me on.
No worries, my friend. No worries at all. Thank you for taking time out of your, you know, rather late night. It's 10 p.m. over there in the UK, so we really appreciate you taking the time. But, Steve, you know, I start every interview with, you know, obviously, give a little background. I met Steve last year when I actually was asked to be a guest on Beyond the White Noise Paranormal as we were getting this show up and running. They've been great, very supportive with Mo and Aaron and Kurt. As far as supporting me and supporting the growth of this show. And that's actually how I met Steve. So it's been really exciting for me to get him on the other end of asking questions. So, Steve, I guess question number one, my friend, is what got you into this wonderful world we call the paranormal?
Well, it's kind of like being a side interest, to be fair, alongside the conspiracy theories and such like that. But it kind of revolved around like the UFO sort of side of things, and I kind of crossed paths with the paranormal world, and that's when I got into like hauntings and ghost stories and stuff like that, and the paranormal investigation side came after that. When I found that Mo and Adam were actually a fan of it as well, I wanted to know more. Kind of clicked in that way, really. And I kind of met Kurt the same way you met me last year through Blog Talk Radio and stuff like that, doing the same stuff.
Gotcha.
So
you had an interest in conspiracies and conspiracy theories, which led you to ufology, which then kind of took you into the other realms of the paranormal of spirits and ghosts and whatnot.
It was kind of like a progression thing.
Okay. Do you have any interest in cryptids as well? Or is it just the spirits and ufology?
Especially around around Bigfoot. I'm kind of on the side that is a possibility, simply because we just don't know what type of species are on this planet, really, from all backgrounds. So I think it's a possibility. I think there's some cryptid legends or myths or stories out there that are just a bit too far-fetched, it
Sure.
must say. But I
I
think
think we share a
the
similar
best
viewpoint
one,
on that.
yeah, I think the best one is definitely obviously Bigfoot. I don't mind the Chupacabra sort of legend, which I think is practically being solved now, basically from what I understand, from what I've read. But I'm not
Well,
too
you know,
sure
it's
on that.
interesting. That theory and that cryptid reports have kind of evolved over the years. I was speaking with Ken Gerhard, who's a world-renowned cryptozoologist, and he said when that first got started in Puerto Rico, the descriptions of it was like a giant, like bug-like creature. But here
Yeah,
in the
that's what
last
I heard as
couple
well, actually.
years, it's morphed into these hairless dog, mangy coyote type deals. And he said it
Yeah.
was based on one lady in Texas, kind of was the spurhead of that new movement of the chupacabra. So, in his opinion, everything that is considered a chupacabra now is basically just a canine with mange of some type. But that there was an original chupacabra in Puerto Rico and South America that was a completely different creature that he thinks is still possible could exist.
Would that be the woman that found supposedly found a dead one on the side of the road and actually
Exactly.
put it on, stuck it in the freezer? And she was very what I was found strange about that is that she was really reluctant on giving people samples for DNA testing and stuff like that. And she claimed she wanted to know what the species was and prove it was a chupacabra one way or the other. Now, if you did, then you would give DNA samples over within a second, so I
Wouldn't think
couldn't
so.
quite understand that side of it. So,
But
well,
in
I
the
certainly
ensuing
would.
years, it's been caught on police dashboard cameras, and I think a couple other
Yeah,
dead
yeah.
bodies have turned up that they've actually done DNA analysis on that said, yeah, it's either a coyote or a wild dog with mange. So that
Yeah.
portion of the legend, I think, has been officially debunked, but the original portion of the legend, I think, is definitely still out there. And I'm like you, I share the opinion that there's a lot of cryptids that could potentially exist out there. There's a lot of parts of
Yeah.
this country that in this world even where people just don't go through enough to know whether things are there or not.
Yeah.
And when you take into account thousands of reports over hundreds of years from all different types parts of the world by very credible witnesses, law enforcement, clergy, military, politicians. Well, we'll forget that last one. But the first three are very credible. They all report seeing these things, and statistics say they can't all be misdiagnoses and hoaxes.
Well, yeah, I
They've
mean,
got to be seeing something out there.
exactly. But when you've got like deep sea exploration, that's still going on. Marine biology is advancing on a daily basis, and you just don't know what's at the bottom of the ocean because we can't get down that far at the moment. And when you
Right.
take that into consideration, the possibilities of new species that get found every year, everything from a small different type of or different breed of spider, for instance, right up to a Bigfoot, shall we say, or Sasquatch, whatever you want to call it. It's got to be possible. Until there's evidence to suggest the obvious, but one way or another, then the possibility is always there, in my opinion. And that's where I kind of
Absolutely.
stand on
Okay.
it.
And then,
I've got to
am
say,
I
I
right to
definitely.
assume you think UFOs do exist?
Well, it's a possibility. Well, we put some
Some
out
of them,
there.
anyway, some of the reports.
Yeah, some of them, yeah. Well, at the other
Yeah,
end of the
'cause
Voyager journey, they all think that that's a UFO at one point, I suppose, if there's anyone out there. So, and we put it up there, so, maybe.
Okay. So, what was it about conspiracy theories that initially got you into that aspect of it? What kind of triggered you to go, I want to learn more about these things?
That actually started. It was my father's fault that it actually started with JFK. It was when my dad first got me into it and was telling me about the JFK assassination. So that was the first one that actually grabbed my attention many years ago. And it's kind of stemmed from that, really. I obviously looked extensively into that and got the background on that. And that just kicked me off. And then from there, like I said, with the going into cryptids and Bigfoots and UFOs and ufology, anything that's remotely paranormal as well, with a bit of a conspiracy twist to it, grabbed my attention. So it was kind of keeping my fingers in all the pies, and then whap, then all of a sudden 9/11 happened, and that was that, really. I was set. Do you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And it's kind of kicked on from there, really. But I suppose it just gets me when you know there's something more to the story, and the official story, shall we say, in inverted commas, isn't, you know, it's not the truth sometimes. And I think that's what keeps me going. It went at times, it reads between the lines when you hear the news reports, like which happened a couple of days ago, a couple of weeks ago, even with this new virus, for instance, that's getting found and stuff like that, and the Ebola virus situation, which a few months back, as an example. If you read between the lines, you tend to see the or you tend to discover the truth, if you like. But it keeps me going. It's always something else. That's really,
you know, I've always had
on the end of
a casual interest in conspiracy theories. Obviously, not to the level that you or our mutual friend Ed Bogrowski have. You guys have invested a lot of time in research.
He actually messaged me today saying we've got to hook up, we've got to talk, we can go for hours. I said, I've got folders here that could keep us going for weeks, Ed, we'll be fine.
I always used to subscribe to the theory that all conspiracy theories had at least a grain of truth in them. But I've revisited that stance in the fact that, you know, I see stories like Adolf Hitler became Walt Disney after the war. He snuck out, moved to America, and became Walt Disney. I'm like, okay. And then this latest one that I just heard, the singer Katy Perry is supposedly JonBenet Ramsey, the kid that was the baby pageant child that was killed many, many years ago. Dead. She's been living in hiding and decided to become... you know, Katy Perry. There's the one that lead singer of Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, didn't really kill himself. Instead, he's now the lead singer of the band Weezer. So I have to revisit my thought of there's a kernel of truth in every one of them. Some of them are just so outlandish that they're fun to read.
Yeah.
But I can't take them serious. But then on the other hand, there's some that they really cause you to think. The JFK one has also been a fascination with me since I was younger, and Oliver Stone's movie JFK really caught my attention.
Yeah, it's
I was
a brilliant
like,
movie.
Huh,
absolutely
that's
brilliant
not the
movie.
Story I was told growing up, you know.
Exactly,
so, out of all
but
the
that
ones
was
that you've
exactly
researched,
the same for me.
Okay, out of all the ones that you've researched, what would you say is the one that you feel has the most credibility as far as being truthful to it?
What, truthful as in the official story was true?
No,
or
as in, like,
it's
more happened than what the official story was.
Oh, it's hands down at the moment. It's, for me, anyway, for my generation, it's 9/11, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything to compare against it at the minute.
And for some of my listeners that may not be familiar with the external workings of 9/11 and people that have the conspiracies about it, can you just briefly touch base with them about, you know, what it is that you think is above and beyond the official story we've been given?
Well, it's if you take the whole official story, and if you look at it just as a normal crime case, for instance, the official story, the investigation, the inquiry, whatever you want to call it, fell short of what a normal court case would be, first and foremost. That's the first bump that you find. For instance, key witnesses weren't called in many different areas, probably too many to mention here at the minute, but in many different areas, key witnesses that had credible evidence, eyewitness testimony, expert witness testimony, you name it, from right across the board, from the word go, even before 9/11, in the days leading up to it, and stuff like that. We've had so many different experts coming out from all corners saying that they did know that it was going to happen, it was planned, it was this, that, and the other, and yet they weren't called forward as a witness in the official investigation, the official inquiry. And there's that 28-page gap as well that's missing, that still hasn't been made public yet. And it makes you think, what's in them 28 pages that they're not telling us? Stuff like that, you know what I mean? And
okay, yeah.
It's that's just one of many. There's literally hundreds, thousands even. I mean, I'm at the minute I've gathered information on 9/11, and I had to take a break for like 3 months because it was that much stuff. It really was.
Wow.
It's frightening.
Are you thinking of possibly writing a book on your theory on it?
That's the plan. That's the idea of it. I don't actually exactly know when that's going to be or what the book's going to be called, for instance. But that's what the plan is. That's what my hope is to get all this information as much as I can possibly get. Get it all mapped out in the right way and set out so it's easy for people to understand, and just doing my bit and trying to get the truth out there, because I kind of feel like I've got to, because this happened in, you know, it was like my JFK moment, if you like, if that makes any sense.
Sure, absolutely.
And I just feel like if I don't get off my chest, then I'm not doing my bit, especially when you know that something's not right, and it just doesn't sit right. And we go to war based on these lives. Both we do, and both your guys over there, we go to war on them, and I just don't feel right about that. So I'm very passionate about it.
Gotcha. Okay. And I know we talked offline a couple weeks ago, and you said people that investigate conspiracies like you do don't like to be called conspiracy theorists. You prefer conspiracy investigator. Now, is that because there's that public perception that a conspiracy theorist is, and again, not my opinion, but some people would think they're whack jobs. Just, you know, like I said, would believe that Adolf Hitler became Walt Disney, would believe anything, any story told to them. Is that the connotation with it? Is that why they prefer conspiracy investigator?
It's the whole perception that we all sit around with these tinfoil hats to stop aliens from invading our brains, you know what I mean? It's like that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a comedy point of view or whatever. That's exactly right. It's the whole perception. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a conspiracy theorist or investigating conspiracy theories even. It's just the term conspiracy theory is now deemed nut job, whack job, or words of that effect by the mainstream media, by society and stuff like that. And straight away, it's like a stereotypical thing now. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You're talking about all the rubbish. And we're not really. We're just, all we're doing is people and human beings is just asking questions where we think they should be asked. And, everyone should have that right, in my opinion.
Sure, make it absolutely.
Job, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, not at all. I mean, obviously, there's probably some small segment of conspiracy theorists that are nut jobs, hence the one that I spoke about earlier.
There's plenty of them. I've met some of them, so.
but, you know, we talked earlier about, you said 9/11 is definitely in JFK, are some of the ones that you feel real passionate about. We weren't given the true story. But on the flip side, what ones have you heard where you just scratch your head and you're like, really? There's no way this is possibly true.
The one that keeps propping up, in fact, I actually seen another story today on it, which really, I don't know whether it's a laugh or just sort of turn away and discuss, is the reptilian one, that the royal family are reptilian aliens from the planet Reptoid or something stupid, I don't know.
We have that one over here too. They're supposedly living underground in Los Angeles, getting ready
that's
to take
one,
over
the
world. Okay.
I struggle
with that one too. Now, the Denver airport, have you done any research on that one?
Yes, we have. We've done a bit of research on it.
Now, obviously, there's something underneath the Denver airport. What is your theory on what is underneath the Denver airport?
Honestly, I mean, I think it might have some sort of connection to maybe nearby secret bases that aren't on maps, for instance, Area 51, stuff like that. For what purpose, I don't know. This is just a theory, but there is miles and miles of tunnels that you could fit another airport in underneath Denver Airport.
Right, that's my understanding.
It's the fact that it's built way outside Denver as well is a bit suspicious, and it's quite a big airport and quite a lot of money spent on it for just an airport. It was like it raised your eyebrows, if you like, so. I suppose there is something there, but to what degree, I don't know. But I think there's definitely something under there. There's definitely a connection underground, anyway. But I just don't know where it goes.
Yeah.
I don't know what your take on that is like, but.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something there. And one thing that I struggle with as far as UFOs, now, I'll be the first to admit, I think statistically, there's got to be something else deemed life in this universe. It is so vast.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be some semblance of life somewhere else besides us. Now, what that semblance of life is. Is it little green men? Is it little gray men with big bug eyes? Is it an amoeba somewhere? I don't know. But I would just say statistics say there's got to be something else out there. Has that something else out here ever visited our planet? I can't say for sure. And I also subscribe to the fact that a lot of UFO sightings throughout the years were experimental military aircraft. Where do you weigh in on so many UFO sightings? What do you think, as far as percentage, could be natural things a la experimental secret aircraft versus what could possibly be legitimate, you know, alien sightings?
It's kind of a, I suppose it's kind of a, where I am, where I'm at myself, is like it's kind of a mixture. I mean, you've got like, you've got the ones that are experimental aircraft, like for instance, if you remember back, say, early, late 80s, early 90s, there was a big spout of triangular-shaped UFOs. Then the first Gulf War happened, and we were introduced to the stealth bomber. And there was your triangle UFO. And that day sort of went away then. And it's become, I think the latest craze is cube-shaped UFOs or something like that, or just that sort of shape. But yeah, it's kind of a mixture of them two, really. And then you've got the ones that are just, they could be something natural that we just simply don't know about yet. They're not necessarily UFOs like flying saucers, for instance. They could be a strange cloud formation or something like that that just looks weird. Then you've got your typical UFO ones, which are the Roswells and the Rendlesham's of this world that just keep coming up all the time, no matter how many times you look at, you're trying to find different stories and to back up that evidence. They keep popping up and keep getting talked about all the time, which I'm now very suspicious about, to be honest with you. It's become up that many times. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Where do you weigh in on Area 51? Is that just a super secret squirrel military base where they are using all their, you know, super secret airplanes and storing super secret technology? Or do you think it's possible that there could be some type of alien tech, dare I say, even alien life being kept there?
Excuse me. Well, it's definitely a secret testing place. I think that there's no doubt about that. I mean, I believe the stealth Black Hawk helicopters that they used in the Bin Laden capture, stroke, killing, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I believe they were stored there. It's definitely a testing thing. I think that's where the stealth bombs were even kept as well. I remember rightly back in the 90s. I also believe if there was a UFO crash, it would be one of the places where you would take it, because it was so secret, safe and secure anyway. So it kind of makes sense if you would take something like that there, if that happened, obviously. Whether there's any alien life there or reptilian people running around on the ground over there, I don't know. You'd probably be able to tell me that more than me. So.
Correct me if I'm wrong history-wise. Area 51 originally supposedly was located near Roswell, correct? And at some point it moved to Nevada. Am I right in that? And I apologize, I'm not real strong on my history on it.
No, I think it's always been where it is. I think what shed people's light on it was Roswell and the story behind Roswell and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. There was a bit of I think it may have been taken there first, remember rightly? I can't remember off the top of my head, and then from there some of it got took to Area 51, like the aliens, the dead bodies or whatever that was supposed to be there on the ground.
Where do you subscribe to the theory? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go on, you're okay.
I was going to say, do you subscribe to the theory? You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Where do you subscribe to the theory that some people say that where we know Area 51 is outside of Las Vegas is not actually the real Area 51, that they've allowed the media and the general public to think that's where it is, and it's actually located farther up in Nevada, near Reno. And the only reason I ask that, and the only reason I subscribe any type of validity to that argument, is my I used to have a family member that was stationed at a naval base up near Reno, and when I went to see them on our way back, we were driving across next to a cornfield that had an F-16 screaming over it right above the ground, like nowhere that plane should not be flying that low. And then it was several years later I heard that the Area 51 that we all think is Area 51 is actually just a smoke and mirror job. They're trying to like tell people, oh yeah, it exists, but look for it here when it's really there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I suppose it's a possibility. It's like a sleight of hand thing, isn't it? I have actually heard similar stories myself that one place is Reno, like you mentioned, and another place is S7 or somewhere like that, which is just slightly further south of Area 51. It's not as big, though, apparently, although I've not actually seen it myself. Another place I've heard that it might be possibly moved to somewhere in Utah, I've heard, or read somewhere in a story. I can't remember where off the top of my head. But yeah, I've heard similar stories myself. Like, I don't really know, to be sure. I couldn't tell you either way whether it's for definite it's not there and it's like a smokescreen type of thing. Because the surrounding area of Area 51 is getting bought up now by the US military to protect that area, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, obviously, as technology grows, I should imagine. So I think generally it's probably still there. Maybe they might source work out somewhere else, maybe, and just not have a lot of attention at the base, which kind of makes sense, I suppose. So maybe it's a mixture of the two.
Because of Area 51, originally perimeter fence did not include some of the mountains that are around it that are now included in its area now. And people were able to look down into the base. And like you said, as advancements in technology, where those cameras and those scopes and those binoculars got more powerful, now they've suddenly extended that fence back out so that you're still kind of backing up and, you know, kind of compensating for that advance in technology. So it's interesting you say that. I know you mentioned earlier about the reptoids, the royal family being reptoids. And obviously, I'm only really familiar with the amount of conspiracy theories here in the United States. But what are some of the other big ones over there in the United Kingdom that you guys have investigated or researched?
Well, aside from 9/11 and maybe JFK that I've looked into, one big one over here is the death of Princess Diana that I've looked into myself over here. It's another one that I'm very passionate about because basically it was murder. And I'm sorry if I offend people by saying that, but that's my personal opinion. They actually murdered her. Now, for what reason? There's many different theories, probably one or two, but probably more realistic than the rest. One of them's to do with the mining industry, as in mine development of mines. It's big money apparently, and she was against mines, obviously campaigning to get them removed from different places in Africa and stuff like that, where they're just being left scattered, and it was like children in Africa were getting blown up and losing legs and arms and obviously losing their lives as well. And she was campaigning against them. And because it was such a high profile figure, even when she wasn't a royal anymore, people still loved her. She was deemed a threat, basically, and that's what the theory is, that eventually they took her out. But it was, either way you look at it, it was definitely murder. Yeah, I think so, anyway. They keep saying it's an accident, so...
Well, you know, hopefully no one listening, like you said, does take offense to that. I can speak to Mr. Foy's character. He is not a whack job, so he's done extensive research on some of these, and there are some he's going to tell us are bogus, you know, and he's going to tell us that there's some that, you know, aren't worth the time of even reading. But you've done a lot of research, and so if you feel, you know, that you think it's murder based upon your research and upon the stories and the theories that you've read, I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, everyone is entitled to their opinion.
Exactly, yeah.
I have not done enough research on that one to either confirm or deny it, other than I've heard the stories that it was murder, but I never heard the specifics as to why people thought it was murder. But speaking of murders, obviously, the last 20 years or so, maybe even 30 years, the world has been filled with famous people, whether they be actors, musicians, famous people have died. And there's that always running conspiracy theory that they're not really dead, going from Elvis Presley to Tupac and Biggie Smalls, You know, where do you weigh in on those? Are there any ones of those that you think could be more plausible than others as far as famous people still being alive and just, you know, deciding to give up the fame and live a quiet rest of their life somewhere?
Well, I suppose from that particular point to start off, people like the likes of Elvis and Michael Jackson even would have the sort of resources to definitely do that if they wanted to get away from the limelight all of a sudden, change of identity and just get away from everything to get out of whatever they were into. Then people like that would have the means to do that. But I mean, I don't really pay them much attention, to be fair. I suppose some of them may be possible. I mean, I think the Tupac one raised its head again towards the end of last year.
I thought I'd read it recently somewhere.
Yeah, particularly, I don't know if it was a family member or someone said that he was actually living in, was it Cuba, or, on the island Cuba or something like that?
I think so, with some of his family, well, I think a lot of that members. One has to do with the sheer volume of music that was released after his death. I guess a lot of people just can't wrap their heads around that he had that much stuff in the can or enough workable stuff that producers and whatnot could work around it and produce albums.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's probably why that one is so strong.
I think if he was tied into some sort of extensive contract with whatever music label he was under at the time, would they not have the right to release his music anyway, whether he was here or not? It's like Michael Jackson, for instance, bringing a greatest hit out from, I don't know, what's it, Sony Records that he was with or whatever. Because the music's theirs, it's not his type of thing. Because I think the music industry is something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's another show for another day.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think a lot of it is people watched that movie in the 80s, Eddie and the Cruisers. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Where the lead rock singer disappears and fakes his death and then comes back years later. So I think everybody kind of wants that to be really true with their favorite artist. Like you said, I agree with you that the likes of Elvis or Michael Jackson would have the means to do that. But, you know, by the same token, you can flip that around, and that's why I always say people with these theories that JonBenet Ramsey is now Katy Perry and, you know, the lead singer Nirvana is now the lead singer Weezer. Like, if they're going to give all that up and get away, why would they suddenly turn around and put themselves back in the spotlight to potentially be found out? That just makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the idea of doing something like that is to come away from the limelight and away from public eye and stuff like that. So why would you then stay in it under another persona? It doesn't make sense. Yeah. So... You just wouldn't do that.
I had to lay my money on one, I would say it was Elvis. I would say Elvis would be the one that probably faked his death. I don't know why. I don't have anything to support that, but that's just the one that my gut tells me could be the most possible.
I believe he was some sort of FBI informant as well, wasn't he, or something like that? From what I've read.
There's another theory there. There's differing opinions on. Some people say he strictly was like just a, you know, quote unquote honorary member, and then some people said he actually was a real informant, speaking about, I believe, the Dixie Mafia and things of that nature. So again, there's several conspiracies tied into Elvis. You could probably do a whole show on just the ones tied to him. That's one my gut tells me if anyone was possible, mainly because of the time frame too. It's a lot harder to fake your death nowadays and get away with it because of the requirements of ID and fingerprints at so many locations that weren't that way before. You know, in the late 70s, it was a lot easier to just disappear, whether you were Elvis Presley or Joe Schmo next door, than it is nowadays.
Yeah, well, it definitely is. I mean, especially with the way the internet is these days, even social media, in fact. I mean, you've got so many... eyes, if for want of a better word, looking at, you know, following your every movement, everywhere your smartphone goes, you're tracked, stuff like that. And I think that's the real, what people need to realise, the way the world is now, you know what I mean? Because of the way it was in the 70s and stuff like that. And like you say, it was a lot easier to do back then if you were going to do it. I mean, if you think about the way the mafia families wanted to do it, even as early back, far back as the 30s and stuff, when he wanted to get rid of someone, it was so much easier for him to do and get away with it, you know what I mean? So, So yeah, I agree with you. It's one of them things.
Now, if we could kind of round back a little bit to Bigfoot, I've heard a theory within the last year, which, I got to say, for a while I struggled with the theory of Bigfoot. I'm like, why are we not finding bodies? Why have we not had another concrete piece of video evidence besides the Patterson-Gimlin film? Why? I keep asking myself, why? And then someone brought up a theory, which is, to me, in one aspect, so far out there, and yet seems to be the one that I can wrap my head around the most. What's your opinion of the theory that the reason we don't find credible evidence for Bigfoot is either A, he's some type of spirit, or B, he's some type of alien creature or extra-dimensional being, and either beams up to his ship or goes back to his own dimension, and that's why we're never able to find bodies or DNA or bones.
My firm opinion is that if it does exist, which is I think it's a possibility, it's a creature of some sort. I don't think it's a spirit as such. Although I know, I actually believe one of the bigger, certainly the more credible witnesses are the American Indian, Native American Indian people of the U.S. and especially in the Northern Territory areas and stuff. And they kind of already accepted the fact that Sasquatch does exist, and they kind of leave it alone. And they're very, really open up about it, unless they really trust you and stuff like that. So if someone from them, one of them tribes, open up and tell you about the Sasquatch and what sort of territory he lives in and stuff like that, and where to find him and stuff, and that they kind of leave him alone and don't pest him, don't bother them and stuff like that, then you've got no reason to disbelieve that. I mean, these people don't really speak to people anyway. They kind of keep themselves to themselves. They're certainly not in the press every single day. They're not doing Finding Bigfoot on the Animal Channel, for instance, you know what I mean? So you kind of go with them, and you kind of believe their story than what you would Moneymaker's story, for instance, of Finding Bigfoot, because let's face it, he's just an idiot. You know what I mean? And he winds me up. He's a terrible Sasquatchologist, if there's such a word. But he just you go with more what they said than anyone else, because they've been around. I've been in the same sort of territory that these big feet, Bigfoots, whatever you want to call them, have lived in for years. So, but I mean, spirits, interdimensional beings, and spaceships and stuff. Probably not. No.
So you're more of the camp that they're perhaps maybe like a descendant of Gigantopithecus or something of that nature,
yeah.
A creature that used to
Yes.
exist more commonly that have just dwindled into small populations that just don't go near people. They're intelligent enough to stay away from people. I've heard rumors and theories that the reason they're not caught on trail cameras is because they can actually see the infrared beam coming off the trail camera and they know to stay away from it. I've heard they're so highly intelligent that they actually bury their own when they get hit or get sick, and that's why we don't find the bodies. There was an interesting thing, and I've not done enough research on it, and I'll ask you your opinion and see if you've heard any of this. The reason I said I could kind of wrap my head around him possibly being an alien was someone once told me, and again, I've not done any research to support this, that a lot of times there's a sighting of some type of mysterious craft in the sky. And then for a few days to a couple weeks thereafter, there's a cluster of Bigfoot sightings in that same location. Have you heard that story or have you done any research on that?
Yeah, I haven't done any research on them, but I have definitely heard the stories. There's a place called oh, what camp? It's in the one of some of the northern states, right? The ones that border Canada and stuff like that.
Seattle or
Where
Oregon?
yeah, somewhere up there where it's mostly forested areas. There's actually a Brown Mountain or something like that. Where there's a lot of
I
UFO
think I've heard,
sightings.
yeah.
And no sooner have you, like the next day or the next course of the next month after the UFO sightings, there's a lot of Bigfoot sightings as well, which kind of people have put two and two together and come up with 2.4. You know what I mean? It's but whether they're connected, I don't know. if they can get some sort of possible evidence to prove otherwise, then I'll firmly change my mind. But I'm not too sure. It's I suppose it's a possibility.
Okay.
But I mean,
being as you're in
never.
The United Kingdom, I'll hit you with a cryptid in your neck of the woods. It's probably just as famous as Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster. Where do you weigh in on the validity of that creature?
It's a tourist attraction. That's no disrespect. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's been so many parties put together to try and find Nessie, as she's called, apparently. I think they would have found something by now. I mean, that lock's not that big, let's be honest. I don't believe in it at all, really. I think someone said they saw something one day and it created a lot of attention, which then created a tourist attraction, and they've just basically kept it going, I think. And that's my honest opinion on it.
Okay, fair
so
enough.
So I don't really believe in that one.
What about the Mothman?
Well, the Mothman's a strange one. I mean, that one
very
actually intrigues me, because it could be interpreted as many things. Some people actually link that to being an alien or UFO related as well. The film The Mothman Prophecies, it was, I can't remember the name of the town where the bridge collapsed, it was actually a true story.
Right.
Whether you've seen the film, it's one with Richard Gere in it. That film, it's called The Mothman Prophecies. I can't remember the name of the town now, but the people were thinking it was gonna be something to do with the power station, which was across the river, and it went. It was to do with the new bridge. And it collapsed, and there was like people stuck in a traffic jam on the bridge, and a lot of people died and stuff like that.
You've been seen at a lot of like tragic locations there for a while, almost
yeah,
as like a harbinger.
I think there was. There was reports like Chernobyl, for instance. Apparently, before the disaster happened, it was seen hanging around Chernobyl in Russia. So it's not tied down to like being a US sort of legend or a UK legend. It's kind of a global thing as well.
I didn't know that one as well.
Areas.
I thought it was strictly a US one.
No, it's a strange one. But it many different cultures as well. Sometimes you might get like the South American sort of semi-tribal culture will report it. Might call it something slightly different, but when they describe what they see, it's the same. The characteristics are the same. Tall, dark, owl-looking figure with the red eyes, stuff like that. And all the similarities are there. So it's an interesting one, that. So I'm not too sure on that one, but it's definitely an interesting one, worth a look at.
See, that's another feather in Bigfoot's cap as far as credibility to me is you have all of
yeah,
these
precisely,
tribes
yeah.
that were isolated back then in the world that didn't communicate with each other. They didn't have people traveling from one tribe to the other all over the world. And like you said, yet are describing a pretty similar creature everywhere from the
yeah.
Yeti in the Himalayas to
yeah,
Bigfoot
just
here.
Sasquatch. Literally took the words right out of your mouth.
Down here in Florida, from the tribes down here, have seen the skunk ape. It's interesting, and I think that lends some credibility because it's not like they were living in the technological internet age and they could just put something out there and everybody says, "Oh, that's a
yeah.
cool story. I'm going to say I saw that too." These were people that were isolated, and yet they all said the same thing. So at the very minimum, I think Sasquatch at least existed at one point on this planet. And I feel pretty confident that it's somewhere on this planet. A small population still does. Would you agree with that? Is that a fair statement, you think?
Absolutely. You kind of nailed it right on there, exactly the way I think as well. You mentioned Yeti as well. I do believe there's a possibility that the two of them are linked somehow. Maybe not directly, possibly indirectly, because of the vast distances involved, maybe. But there was an incident in outer Siberia in Russia, the Atlov Pass incident as well. That was deemed to be sort of Yeti-type creature when they students camped out stuck in a snowstorm, and yet in the middle for unknown reasons they suddenly run out of the tents. Some of them were almost naked and were attacked,
right,
and badly mutated by something, but they never ever found what it was. So there was a lot of people saying that that was some sort of Yeti, stroke Bigfoot type creature, and that was in Siberia and Russia. So I think there's a definite possibility that they're all linked in some way, maybe possibly DNA wise, maybe, or evolutionary wise, whichever you want to call it. But
right.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same as you. If there's gonna be something, then America's probably the best place to find it, I think, as far as Bigfoot's concerned.
If you look at it contextually in history, it did exist, because I would think a Gigantopithecus, based on its size, would be a Bigfoot for its time that it lived in. So, a creature that is similar to what is described as a modern-day Bigfoot did live on this planet. It was Gigantopithecus. So, the people that just automatically dismiss it, I just scratch my head. And I go, okay, I get it. There's a lot of people that have vested interest in hoaxing things. There's a lot of people that just misidentify animals because they're not used to the surroundings, and they see a bear or whatnot, and they think it's a Bigfoot. I get it. And that may be a large population of those reports, but it's not all those reports. Military people are trained to be observant. Law enforcement are trained to be observant. These are credible people that have experienced things. It's definitely an interesting theory. And the Bigfoot phenomenon, I find it interesting to read and experience both sides of it.
I'm exactly the same. You mentioned the bear sort of thing. Then a lot of the eyewitness statements may only be for a brief, 10-20 second period. And they may spot a bear standing up on its back legs. Now, a bear can actually, well, certainly a big brown grizzly bear can actually only do that for a certain length of time. It does it as a sign of a threat. It says, if you come any closer, I'm going to kill you, type of thing. And if anyone's seen the movie The Revenant, bears are very nasty when they want to be. Ask Leonardo DiCaprio, we'll tell you all about it. They are quite tall. They are 8 to 9 feet tall on the back legs, but they can only do it for a short. They certainly can't walk around like that. Do you know what I mean? So you do get stories whereby they may be over-exaggerated a bit, maybe, especially if it's suddenly frightened you or spooked you, and then it's suddenly darted off out of your field of view, and you turn around and it's gone. And you don't know what it was, type of thing. But yeah, I mean, that's why I always go back to the native people, the semi-tribes people who have kind of already accepted it, and I've done for generations, accepted the fact that these creatures exist, and they stay well away. They leave well alone the territory that they live in. They don't bother them as such.
And what would be the indigenous tribe's motive for hoaxing it? What would they possibly get out of that? To teach your kids not to go into the woods at night so the bear doesn't eat them? Sorry, but those Native American children, they know how and know what to look for and how to stay away from bear in the woods. They're brought up from birth on how to stay away from things that can hurt them in the woods. So I don't see a motivation for Native American tribes or indigenous tribes anymore.
Like you just said, the children of them indigenous tribes are brought up to respect nature and to be a part of it as well. So they're certainly not going to go to them lengths at all. Do you know what I mean? It's more than likely going to be a group of teenagers coming from a nearby city or town who were out on a weekend break or something like that, and they're having a laugh, dressed up in a ghillie suit to scare a couple of local people.
There's definitely hoaxers out there, for sure. Effective hoaxers out there. People that do come across credible, that they turn out to not be.
I don't think it really helps with programs like Finding Bigfoot as well. I mean, if you believe that program, then America's swarming with Bigfoot. To be honest with you,
the issue I have with finding Bigfoot is at any one point when they're interviewing a witness, one of the four of them says, oh, this can't possibly be a Bigfoot. It's got to be a bear. It's got to be a hoax or whatever. And yet the other three are like, oh, no, I absolutely believe you. But then the very next people they interviewed, the one that said the time before, there's no way this could be a Bigfoot, suddenly that one's the believer, and another one of the four is the skeptic. And I kind of scratch my head like, you know, even the quote-unquote skeptic of the show, Renee, if you read into her bio, she was brought up, her dad believed in Bigfoot and talked to her about it growing up. So how much skepticism is she really approaching it? You know, yeah, she has the biology degree, which, you know, can bring some credibility to her. But she's, I think it's wrong to label her a skeptic because I don't think she is.
Yeah, I do now. I mean, at first, I fell into the bracket that it's always good to have an open-minded skeptic on your team because it brings a bit of realism to whatever you find if you're a serious investigator. Whether it's into Bigfoot or even paranormal, for that matter. Jumping back to paranormal slightly, if you have an open-minded skeptic on your team, then that's a good thing because you want someone there to say, no, that's not what you think it is. It's this or that. But at the same time, when you find something that you can't explain and they can't explain, they're willing to say, I honestly don't know what that is. That could be. You know what I mean? And that's always good. But as you say, as the series have gone on and on with that show, she's become more of a Bigfoot person than what the other three have, really. And Moneymaker himself is, if you listen to the stuff he comes out with, everything that these witnesses describe, what they saw, and they say they see it doing, it's definitely kind of squashy behavior, that, you know what I mean? It's like, Jesus Christ, he just agrees with everyone, you know what I mean? Some of these people could be lying through their teeth.
I have a very keen interest in cryptids. So last year, I found out the Bigfoot Field Research Organization here in Florida, Moneymaker's chapter here in Florida, was going to be doing a Bigfoot hunt. So I reached out to them and said, hey, I'd really like to come out. I've never done it. Please, you know, could you guys teach me? Can you show me what I need to be looking for? Not looking. Yeah, we'd love to have you come out. It's like $400. Like, for what? You want me to pay you to walk me around the woods? And then I can't guarantee that there's not any of your buddies out there in the woods knocking on trees, throwing rocks, howling, you know, making Bigfoot supposed yells and howls. And so that's where Moneymaker lost a lot of respect that I had for that show. Now, I granted, as an entertainment show, I still watch it. I watch it every week. But the seriousness and the credibility isn't there for me.
I still watch it because whenever they do the gathering of witnesses, you might get the odd bit of footage that looks interesting, possibly credible. The images are sometimes not as good as what you've seen, but you might get the odd gem in a bunch of rough sort of grainy photos that might think, you might think, well, it looks credible, looks decent. And they do stumble on the odd story that's got some credibility and got some backbone to it that's still unexplained and has been unexplained for many years. And that's the only reason why I still watch it. Other than that, I've seen them doing one just last week whereby they organised the local people from wherever it was, can't remember where it was now, and they'd done it like a search party, like you'd go look for a missing kid in the woods. They had a big line of people. And every so often, every, say, 10th person, if you like, had a whistle. And they actually said to the people, if you spot something that's Bigfoot related or you think or something like that, blow your whistle and one of us will come running over and have a look. And I'm thinking, if there's going to be a Bigfoot standing by a tree, minding its own business, having a little scratch or something like that, and there's this big line of people come walking through, and then they hear this high-pitched whistle, it's going to bolt, it's going to run, it's going to do what every animal does and get the hell out, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I didn't see the point in that, and that's just one of many things that have made me turn over, basically, when I've seen that.
Well, you know, we talked about Nessie a little earlier, there's another one from the United Kingdom that I only recently became aware of. I caught an old episode of Fact or Faked, the Paranormal Files, and they were investigating the Beast of Dartmoor. Have you done any research into that one? And if so, could you enlighten my listeners a little bit about the story on that and maybe what you think it is?
Funny enough, I was only speaking to Mo about this just a couple of days ago. because it was one of, we don't get very many cryptid stories over here, to be honest with you, as you can imagine, because it's a lot smaller over here. But that one, there's only like a 10, 11 second clip that I've seen. I think it's the only footage of this animal on Dartmoor. And we used to have like a wild boar over here, something like that. But over the years, they've kind of reduced in numbers and got smaller in size as well. Because we basically, they got hunted not that many, many years ago and for food and whatnot. And because we have domesticated pigs over here now, there's no need to go out hunting them and stuff. And they kind of sort of died off of the size.
Okay.
But it looks like either a giant, well, I'm going to say giant, it looks like a big, muscly boar of sorts. But then right towards the end of the clip, it's long tail sort of flicks up as it's running past the camera, and it makes it look like a jet black lion.
The episode I saw.
Yeah, on the fact of it's the one that I saw as well, and that's where I first seen it. I mentioned it to Mo because we had Ben Hansen on last year for a special, so it was one that I mentioned to Mo, and I don't know much about it myself, to be fair. But it's one that I'm definitely interested in looking into. So
now the moors over there are they like the equivalent of say our swamps here in Florida, where there's just not going to be a lot of people because of the you know the wet nature and you know no one's just walking through a moor, so there could be creatures living out there that stay away from people.
It's a possibility. I mean, it's very vast areas. Sometimes very hilly areas, they can get very misty and foggy and damp, like you say, swampy conditions. Money making would have you believe there'd be a family of Bigfoot living it somewhere, probably. You know what I mean? But but yeah, definitely. I mean, there could be various breeds of, I don't know, wild dog, fox, maybe. There's definitely many big black cat stories floating around the many different areas of the country and stuff like that. We have one even.
But the English government's official line is there's no wild big cats in the United Kingdom.
That's their official line, yeah. But it's also interesting to note that, although that is their official line, they do have a hotline in case you do spot them, which I thought was weird.
Really? So there's a hotline just in case you happen to spot one, even though they say there shouldn't be one out there.
Yeah, it was kind of like when the UFOs first happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, If there wasn't one, if that's what you know, what you're saying is true, there's not one. Why have the phone line anyway? It's
Yeah, exactly.
So
you've done some paranormal research as far as the spirit cases. Can you talk to my listeners a little bit about maybe some of the cases that you've been on and some of the interesting places you've investigated throughout your time?
Well, I've only been like paranormal investigating in a short time with Mo Adam and stuff like that. We've done quite a few local places in Liverpool, which have been very good. There's a Bidston Hill, for instance, over in Birkenhead area of our region on Merseyside here in Liverpool. Many years ago, it was an area for devil worshipping and stuff like that. It was meant to be satanic rituals carried out there as well, as well as one fella in particular whose name escapes me at the minute, was meant to be buried there after he got hunted down and killed because he was a believer in the devil and Satan and stuff like that. Yeah, I think Mo knows the full story on that one if you want to get more information on that.
Okay.
There's been the one sort of big story in the UK really is probably other than There's many, like the Enfield Poltergeist, where they killed all the witches on the hill, I can't remember the name of it. So it's the name
now, is
it
correct or wrong, that's the one that the Conjuring 2 movie is supposed to be based on, correct?
The Enfield Poltergeist, that's what I heard as well,
Ed and Lorraine Warren's involvement in it, even though they say they weren't really that involved.
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand is that they looked at it. I mean, they sort of researched it, I suppose, for want of a better way. But as far as I know, they never came over and investigated it. I don't think they did anyway. But yeah, I've actually heard that as well. Is that the Conjuring 2 is going to be based on that story?
Okay. I had Andrea Perrin on a few weeks ago, who obviously The Conjuring 1 is based on. And as the way she explained it, Warner Brothers, I think, is the company behind it, actually purchased the case files of Ed and Lorraine Warren. And so any case that they even remotely touched that they wrote down in these files, Warner Brothers now has the ability to release as a movie in the Conjuring line. You know, obviously,
so
they
is,
had
that,
more
is that
than
the reason is behind Annabelle the doll?
Right, yeah. So she said that, you know, Lorraine obviously is still alive. And she isn't necessarily happy about the track that they went, but, you know, it's kind of, you signed your deal to the devil. They paid you for it. You don't control it anymore. I know Andrea was not happy with how The Conjuring came out. She's actually working on releasing a movie from her perspective on what really happened. So I'm interested to see that. It's funny how Hollywood can do that.
Yeah. Well, it's exactly like the Annabelle side of things. I mean, when you actually look at the Annabelle doll in the movie Annabelle compared to the actual real Annabelle doll that's in the Warren's museum, they're totally different. I mean, it's a typical, what do you call it, a Raggedy Ann doll, is it, in the States? I mean, how many of them were sold? I mean, you know, thousands probably, I don't know. But when you look at the Annabelle film compared to the actual doll itself, it's a vast difference, to be honest with you. So I can see your point
it's
there,
funny
definitely.
How Hollywood embellishes, and I know you don't have a ton of experience with the spirit side of the paranormal, but as someone that's been doing this for going on a decade, I get frustrated sometimes, but then I have to take a step back and remember it's just for entertainment. When I watch paranormal television, and I'll watch all the new shows that come out to see if I like them. Some I do, some I don't. I watch them from an entertainment perspective, because if I watch them from a realistic perspective, I'm going to get pissed off and turn it off.
I'm currently at the stage where you would get pissed off and turn off, especially when you're watching people trying to catch spirits in a vortex pyramid or something stupid. I don't know.
Police officer, and he told me a couple years ago. He said, "You know, I used to watch cop shows on TV and get so upset because they, you know, they embellish and they glamorize what I do, and they don't show the rough parts and the boring parts of what I do." He said, "But then one day I realized I took a step back." He says, "And if I just watch it with knowing that what the bare bones of what I do is there, and the rest is simply for entertainment," he's like, "I can watch them all day now." And so that's the kind of mindset I go into paranormal television with. The bare bones of what I do is there, but everything else is strictly entertainment. And the people that I've had on the show that have been on paranormal TV have said the same thing. So I don't think I'm off track there.
It's a way to disconnect, I suppose, isn't it, when you want a break as well. I look at it more lightheartedly, you know, in that sort of sense, which is something I need to learn to do with conspiracy theories, to be honest with you, especially the 9/11
I had Todd from Alaska Monsters on last year, and he's the trap builder for that show. And what I said to him was, did I lead in with, "Dude, there's no possible way that your show is real, or at least a lot of what you're hunting on there is real. Maybe some of them are." No, because there's no point in that. That's going to make the conversation go nowhere, and I'm going to get hung up on. Because I don't necessarily feel that way. But what I said was, "Hey, thank you for you and your guys putting a show on TV that my 5-year-old grandson and I can watch together and have it be entertaining. Because there's not a lot of that on TV anymore." You know? And that's that's the mindset I got to remember. Can I shoot holes in not so much Alaska monsters, but more mountain monsters? You know, with this subplot of there's another group out there hunting these Bigfoots too, and yada, 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 and all the mystical stuff they've brought in this season. Yes, I could poke holes in it all day long. But if I just sit back and find it entertaining, you know, Batman versus Superman isn't real either, but I'll go watch it because it's entertaining.
Well, yeah, I'm exactly the same. It might be my lad, Jason, who was pitching with me in the picture that I sent you. He loves finding Bigfoot. He's forever copying the Bigfoot calls and stuff like that, which puts the frighteners up me mum, which is absolutely hilarious. So
what,
I'm kind of with you on that one.
What paranormal shows do you watch over there? right now?
I actually personally, I've stopped watching them now, to be honest with you. I used to watch Ghost Hunters International when that was going on, Ghost Hunters with the Taps team for a bit. I thought that was pretty decent. I certainly don't watch Most Haunted anymore. I don't really watch that. Most Haunted
it's
anyway.
It's funny that you mentioned those two in the same breath. I just had Rob Demarest on 2 weeks ago, and he goes, I'm going to give you guys a huge shocker news flash for you, is I'll tell you the one program that I'll guarantee you is 100% fake. And he goes, Most Haunted. And I just started laughing. And I go, you talking about that episode where the guy gets pulled back, but you can see the rope tied to his belt? And he just started laughing. He goes, yep. He goes, there's not a damn thing about that. He goes, those people may be real psychics and whatnot. He goes, but they ain't doing real psychic stuff on this show.
Well, as much as it pains me to admit it, the psychic on the show, Derek Acorda, is actually a local lad from Liverpool. Want to say that we're not all like that in Liverpool, thank God. and we certainly don't have anyone by the name of Sam following us around that we can't see. Unless your name is Mo, obviously.
Now, how does that work in the UK as far as releases of new paranormal shows? Do you get them released there when we get them here in the States? Do you get them before us, after us?
We get them after us, I think. I've noticed that actually with the episodes of like the Ancient Aliens and stuff like that. That you'd get them in the States first, and about 2 weeks later you might get the new series starting here, and so we're already like 2 weeks behind.
See, it's kind of in the reverse over here. On like our BBC America, there's a couple shows in there I love. One of them's The Musketeers. You guys will get that like the beginning of the year, the new season. And then it's almost like a year later before it shows up here on BBC America.
Yeah, it's just the way they do things. I think it's a funny way of doing things. And then sometimes as well, especially on the History Channel or H2, whatever it's called over here, they might show the episodes in a different order to what they are laid out. When you go to like watch them on catch up, shall we say, not download them. I don't download anything, I promise. when you watch them in the correct order, they make more sense. But over here, they tend to show them in a pretty random order. So it's different, I suppose, in many ways.
Oh, okay. So like even regular series sometimes aren't shown in the chronological order to follow the story.
It's even like that with the TV series, like the likes of Gotham, Blindspot, the new X-Files that's just finished. They showed them like either 2 weeks behind when they actually came out in the States, or when they did show them, they had like a mid-season break, and then they advertised the next half of season one as like season two, if you like the new series, and it's not actually the new series, it's actually the continuation of season one or whatever it is. It's just the way we do things over here, I think.
Gotcha. One of them. All right, are you ready for a couple out of bounds, outside the paranormal questions for you?
Go on then.
All right. Daniel Craig just retired of being James Bond. Who would C4 fit to be the new James Bond?
I would ask Daniel Craig to reconsider, to be honest with you, because if someone like, I don't know.
Well, the two names I've heard have been Tom Hiddleston, who played Loki in the Avengers, and Idris Elba.
No, Idris Elba wouldn't. They're both good actors. I like the pair of them, especially Tom Hiddleston. My personal choice would probably be Tom Hardy. Or what did he be
Tom
more
Hardy.
Interested in? I don't know.
I can see Tom Hardy is.
He'd probably be a good Bonder, maybe. But actually,
now, is he British or Australian?
He's British, as far as I know.
Okay.
I think he's British anyway. I've done a little bit of it.
I think he's Australian. Okay, so the next one then, obviously, is Peter Capaldi has been asked to stay on an extra season as Doctor Who. If that doesn't happen, or when his time comes to regenerate, who should be the next Doctor Who?
Homer Simpson. I don't know. I don't really watch it.
Well, I've heard there's a groundswell to have a female doctor that they really are pushing to have some type of a female actress be the next doctor. Which I'm like, okay, we're to the point that probably would be believable. I'm not. It doesn't have to be that the doctor doesn't necessarily have to be a man per se. But then you have people saying they want a female James Bond too. That one I struggle with a little bit. I'm like, no,
Yeah,
James
different way.
Bond's got to be a guy.
James Bond's got to be a guy, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. So I'm not that
Yeah,
old.
so
I don't really pay attention to that TV program.
you're like, just because I'm from Britain doesn't mean I watch Doctor Who.
Doesn't mean I drink tea either.
Oh, come on now. You're ruining my entire, just entire picture I have of people in the United Kingdom.
Coffee for me, mate. Coffee. All day long. Don't
I'm
forget, I've
always
spent most of
surprised
my
about the
time
amount of
studying
people
America.
that live over here in the United States that are so obsessed with your royal family. I'm like,
Yeah,
wait
that's
a minute.
kind of a
We,
bit
like,
weird.
fought a war to get away from these people, 200 years ago, and yes, they're still our allies, but why are you so obsessed with their royal family?
The question you should be asking really is, why are they still our allies? Why is this small little island on this planet that no one touches so influential in so many things around the world? That's the real question.
True. They're a very true statement, my friend.
Huh?
What is, I know you said you haven't been doing the spirit investigations very long, but is there a piece of evidence that you have that you're like, yeah, this is cool, or did you have a personal experience where you're like, yep, spirits definitely exist?
I've had a couple of personal experiences a few times. I don't know what really to put them down to. I do believe that they do exist. I do believe there's something to it. I'm not sure on what side of the fence I sit on as regards to what it is that's next. But I suppose the interdimensional sort of theory has got some legs to it. I do think it's got maybe have something to do with frequencies as well, possibly. But I'm not too sure. I suppose you need more looking into that side of it. But as far as personal experiences go, there's been a couple when we've been investigating with Mo and stuff like that, a couple of photographs that have come back, and we've gone, so we've actually caught something there which we've never actually seen on the night and stuff like that.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely there's something to look into.
Excellent. Now, on your ufology work, have you come across anything you've experienced and/or caught as evidence that you're like, yeah, this should probably change some people's minds that these, aliens do exist?
No, it's not as much as paranormal stuff, I must admit, which is a big surprise, really, myself personally. Because I thought, especially with all these so-called government cover-ups, you would find something. You know what I mean? I mean, it's more along the lines of it's stemmed now to more. It's advanced technology, well ahead of its years, that's getting covered up. If that makes any sense. The recent there was a recent story, funny enough, last week sometime, in the Daily Mail, which is a publication from over here, about the new military spy plane that Lockheed Martin have announced, called the SR-72. Now, if you
Yes.
think back to late night, early mid 90s to late 90s ish, you had the sightings of the so-called Aurora spy plane that was leaving these sort of pulse cloud formations, if you like, and going at ridiculous speeds, Mach 5 or something, 5 times the speed of sound or something stupid like that. And all of a sudden, you fast forward to now, and they're on the verge of announcing a new plane that can go that speed. So it kind of, although at the time they sort of deny it and say, "Oh no, there's not enough of that sort. It's ridiculous. It's nothing." You know what I mean? It's Venus or swamp gas or something stupid like that. There's definitely got something to it because now they're actually saying, "Oh, we've got a new plane. It's a military spy drone or something stupid like that, surveillance drone that can go like 6,000 miles an hour." Something ridiculous, you know what I mean? And you think, hang on a minute. That's what we said that we seen, like, what, 10, 15 years ago, which you said didn't exist. So it did exist, you know what I mean? But
Right.
it's just, you just got to read between the lines. And what's interesting, I think, is that if you think that that's what they're bringing up now, that they denied 20 years ago, what have they got now for 20 years' time?
Exactly.
That's
You
the
know,
exciting thing, you know what I mean?
Where do you subscribe to the theory that the Industrial Revolution, as well as the massive jumps in technology in the last 100 years, has to do with reverse engineering from some type of alien spacecraft?
Well, I think it's a definite possibility, I suppose. It's certainly a vast jump in it, isn't it? When you think of it, the way we've gone. I mean, if someone pointed a picture out to me of Star Trek, funny enough, when you look at the different Star Trek eras through TV, from Captain Kirk's days on TV to the Next Generation days with Picard, the different technologies that they have, we've now got, like the Google glasses with the visor, for instance, the flip communicators were the first flip mobile phones that first hit the market all them years ago. I used to have one, Samsung, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was like, you don't actually notice it at the time, but then when you see it put like that, in that context, you think, oh, I can see where you're going with that, you know what I mean? So when you look back at 100 years, the way we've gone from not being able to fly to going into space or something like that, it's amazing. In that respect, and I suppose it's got to start. The idea's got to start somewhere, and that's a possibility. If we feel some sort of craft, as crashed, that's not ours, certainly not Russian or whatever. Then yeah, why not? I mean, it certainly explain adding a new element to the periodic table that no one's ever even knew existed, like unobtainium or something stupid like that, for instance.
Right.
So it's a definite possibility. I'd never say never.
Okay. But what are your thoughts on the Illuminati? Obviously, there's a lot of theories out there about the Illuminati.
Yeah.
Some people think absolutely.
How long have you got left?
We've got about 30 minutes.
Well, we need longer.
Give me a condensed 30-minute version.
Oof. My thoughts on the Illuminati are that they do exist, and they infiltrated the Freemasons around about 1776 to 1780-ish, and from that point on, they've been controlling world governments for decades, centuries even, and probably will do for the next few hundred years if we don't do something about it. They do exist. Who they are is another question. We've heard obviously the Rothschilds getting mentioned, probably the most name that gets mentioned. I think they're obviously part of it. To what level of influence they've got with it, I don't know. But I don't think they're the only ones. There's a few other big families out there that you could say are part of them as well. And it's mostly the big corporate companies.
Rockefellers, the Bushes, even.
They've definitely got connections to them. Carnegie's another one, yeah, I've heard them as well. There's another German name that escapes me. That's suddenly popped up somewhere. I've heard that before. I can't remember what it's begins with S, like Schaefer or something stupid like that. You don't really hear of them. They're never in the public eye, and that's the thing. And it's like they're always pulling the strings of government elections. You're getting it now with Donald Trump, for instance, and all that in the States at the minute, which I'd keep an eye on, because Jeb Bush is in the running for the presidency, isn't he, I believe, and you don't want another
he's
Bush in the White House.
He was running, he's already dropped out.
Right, okay. I was very, very concerned about that, to be honest.
We've got enough Bushes and Clintons here in this country. for a little while, it'd be nice to have someone without a Bush or Clinton last name.
You didn't want another Bush in the White House, definitely, did you? Let's be honest. But going back to the Illuminati. It's who's pulling the strings behind the families. Yeah, it's them people who are pulling the strings. The big industry, the big corporate people. That's who they are. You're talking like the energy companies, people who own the control the oil, control the money. Speaking from an American point of view, it would be like the people who own the Federal Reserve, stuff like that, over the orchestrating things like 9/11, for instance, the current terrorist situation that's going on across Europe at the minute with the immigrants and stuff like that and the migrants, the attacks that happened just recently, you know what I mean? It's people like that that you, they're not all what they say they are, and you may not even find out who these people are, who these companies are sometimes, and that's the scary thing. And these are the people that control the lives of everyone on the planet, and send each, they're sending us to war with each other over reasons none other than just to make money and make sure that they stay in their seat of power wherever they are. Do you know what I mean? And that's scary when you think about it.
Do you ever get worried about speaking out about them? That, you know,
I must admit, I used to. I don't know more. I used to. Now I've come. It's got that way with me now, whereby if I don't, if say in 10, 15 years time, then and my son starts finding out all this, I've done nothing about it when I had the chance to, I wouldn't be able to look him in the face. Do you know what I mean? It's like. And then that's the way it's got me. It's really got me that pissed off, to be honest with you, with some of them, and how they can get away with it. And it's people's lives you're talking about. How can they do these things and set these things up and create these scenarios that send us to war with each other? And the soldiers who are in the fight, boots on the ground, don't even know what they're fighting for. They're just following orders. God love them. And you know. And we're people, we're no different than what they are. When you strip everything away, they're just human like us. But they're obviously of higher society. Or in some cases, they think they're a higher power as well. But we'll go into that another time. But that's the way I feel about it. So I don't really fear about speaking out about it. It's kind of like why I wanted to try and do the book on 9/11 with all the evidence gathered and that I'm currently doing. And that way, because if I don't do it, I won't be able to forgive myself for not doing it, you know, in years to come. So I'm not really bothered now, to be honest with you.
Well, we're going to have you back on for another show and do either an entire show on just 9/11 and an entire show on just the Illuminati, or combine them into one show and just ask questions about that. Because I'm really interested in both of them. I just don't have the research to even think I'm anywhere near an authoritative person.
Yeah, we certainly set, especially for the 9/11 stuff, we can certainly set a date. There's actually one question I want to ask you personally. I won't ask it now, but I think you might as well already know what it is. But I'll leave that for when we do the next 9/11 show. But yeah, we can definitely do that. I'll gather all the stuff that I've been gathering and put it in some sort of order, and we can just do a 9/11 special at some point. I'll leave that up to you for you to decide with when.
Absolutely. We can do that. We'll get that scheduled down the road. Because, you know, to me, conspiracy theories kind of fall into the realm of the unknown. It isn't necessarily strictly paranormal, but as your case sees, you started off with conspiracy theories and have kind of come into the realm of the paranormal. So I think they're at least peripherally related. You know, there's definitely some mystery and some intrigue, and there's some supposed paranormal things tied into some of these. You know, I know there's a lot of supposed rumors of devil worshipping and things of that nature when it comes to the Illuminati and whatnot. So I don't think we'd be too off topic to have a show about nothing but specific conspiracy theories. And I'd like to educate myself more on it with you on a future show for sure.
Definitely. I'm more than happy to come back home, speak to you at any time, Gary.
Awesome.
You know, it gives me an outlet to, you know, just point people in the right direction. A lot of the stuff that I find out is very easily found online in many books. Don't stop reading just because you haven't got an internet connection. Just pick up a book and you'll find this information in the public, the public arena, shall we say. It's there for everyone
book
to find.
And
it's not
things like that.
Yeah, everything. And as an honest person, and to yourself, it's there for you to look at. You know, make up your own mind. Don't take my word for it, as they say. You know, it's there anyway to put together and use your own common sense and with these things. You will come across the odd whack job, or tinfoil hat were in person. You just sort of kind of brush them aside. You can kind of spot them a mile off in the end. You know what I mean? Don't just because someone says, you might hear a piece of information on the news that says X, Y, and Z. Don't take it as read that that's what it is. There's always some story behind X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean?
Have you lost any friends over your belief in some of these conspiracies? I've heard stories
I don't think
people that's happened to.
I don't think I have, no.
Okay, that's good. Very good.
I'm quite lucky to have a group of friends that actually like some of the conspiracy theories I look into. So they might sometimes like Kate or Mo might drop me a line of information, but you know, what do you think about this or whatever? And I'll go off online, get all the information on it and come back with all this stuff, and you'll be like, oh my god, and then there's stuff like that. So yeah.
It's kind of like our mutual friend, Ed Bukowski. You know, he comes up with a lot of theories, and I say, you know, some of them, I got to tell you, dude, I just don't necessarily buy stock in. But I appreciate your passion about it, and it doesn't drive me away in any way. You know, I still want to be your friend. Yeah. I still want to learn. But just
I absolutely love his Illuminati t-shirt that he created.
Yes.
Did you see that one? It's absolutely fantastic. It was brilliant.
Well, you know, Steve, we've got a little bit of time left here in the show, but unfortunately my voice is about to blow out. I've been sick for the last week and a half. Is there anything else you want to share with my listeners before we go, other than we're definitely going to get those two shows scheduled in the future?
Yeah, first of all, again, thanks for having me on. You know, finally, after being trying to get me on since before Christmas last year. As regards to the 9/11 stuff, I think I posted a picture online with a couple of links on it, just to get you going, just to looking in the right areas. It's kind of good that I haven't delved too deep into it in this show, because it gives people the chance to go look for themselves before we actually dive into it ourselves. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
If you go to consensus911.org, which is consensus911.org is a good site to start gathering information from. There's the 9/11 Commission reports, the official story, that is. So whether you believe the official stories or not, it's always good to have a copy of them for something to go by. And that's one thing I've learned. Even though you don't believe them, it's always good to have them in your locker.
Absolutely.
To argue against. You can get them from 9-11commission.gov for the official stories as well.
Okay. And, so you can compare and contrast.
So you compare and contrast. So it's always good to have the other side's argument to compare yours against, because it's no good having your side, because it's not really a basis for a good argument, is it? Let's be honest. But yeah, you know, we can dive into the rest of it some other time. But that's
excellent.
What I'd say.
So we look forward to that, my friend. How can someone get in contact with you if they just would like to, you know, talk to you about conspiracy theories or pick your brain on something?
Drop me an inbox on Facebook if you want to. I don't really give me direct mobile number out, to be fair. I don't think it's on my Facebook page, to be honest with you. But yeah, just hook me up on Facebook or Twitter, and just drop me an inbox me on Facebook or something like that, and we can go from there. Or if you want, you can use the email address that I gave you earlier today.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, if you guys have trouble finding Steve on Facebook, contact me here at the show, and I'll get you in touch with him. Because he's done a lot of research, and he's got some very interesting things to talk about. So, Steve, once again, I appreciate you taking the time. It's now past 11 out there in the UK. Apologize,
yes,
my voice isn't holding up for the next 25 minutes, but I don't think I'm going to be able to talk if I go much longer. But we will definitely get you scheduled for two more shows for the Illuminati and for the 9/11 special down the road here. So, folks that are listening, keep an eye out for those. Those are going to be in the near future. But once again, Steve, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for taking time, and consider this an open invitation. We'd love to have you back on whenever you have time.
I'm glad you accept it, Gary. Anytime. Thanks for having me on, mate.
All right, bud. Have a good evening.
You too, my friend. Get your voice better.
Yeah, we're gonna try. Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy.
Good night. My guest tonight is paranormal investigator and conspiracy investigator, Mr. Steve Foy. Please join us next Thursday night, the 31st of March, at 9 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be paranormal investigator and paranormal radio host, Mr. Bob Senkner. Bob's a really cool guy, one of the nicest guys I've met in the field of the paranormal. So I'm looking forward to talking to Bob and learning his story. But until then, as I say to each and every one of you every week, and I mean from the bottom of my heart, be good to one another, and we'll see you next week on Unlocking the Unknown Radio. Take care.